Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Wednesday, April the 8th, 2026, 13 and a half minutes past the hour. And a lot of confusion this morning, much as there was a lot of confusion yesterday and on Easter Sunday. Yesterday, President Donald Trump said that if Iran did not meet with the stipulations set by the United States of America by 8 p.m. Eastern last night, i.e. opening up the Strait of Hormuz, that it would be the end of the civilization in Iran as they would know it. It would be completely wiped out. That's a paraphrase from his Truth Social post yesterday morning. Sometime last night between 6:30 and 7 Eastern time, the president said that there had been a two-week ceasefire achieved through Pakistan with Iran for the complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz. But this morning, we're learning that Iran has said passage through the Strait of Hormuz will be allowed if vessels coordinate with its armed forces, but it isn't clear right now whether Tehran would seek to charge a fee or limit traffic. So we're confused at this particular point about what's going on and what's being said and what's going to happen in this two-week period. People are calling for the 25th Amendment to be invoked, one of those people, including Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's interesting to say the least. Somebody we want to bring to these telephones to help us sort all this out is a good friend of this program for many years. He was the star and host of the Judge Joe Brown television series for many, many years, and it was very, very successful. What a pleasure it is to bring to these microphones for this hour, Judge Joe Brown. Judge, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
I heard what you had to say. It's very interesting that somebody would call for the invocation of the 25th Amendment for against someone who has probably shown the most sanity and wisdom handling a long festering problem. Now, what we have here is simply, as he put it in his book, The Art of the Deal. And it's negotiations from extreme strength, and it's 3D chess that's being played on a mass scale with a lot of other people in on the game. And there's a proxy situation. The People's Republic of China armed Iran when it came to its anti-air defenses, and the U.S. has essentially destroyed those with minimal effort. It controls the airspaces absolutely. Now, I know a 50-some-year-old design F-15E got shot down, but you have to understand that aircraft could be shot down at low level by a stray bullet from an AK-47 from some ground troops. So it's a casualty of war. And the rescue operation saw that local Iranians were cooperating with some CIA prompting to block roadways so the Iranian military couldn't get to the scene. The CIA was able to redirect Iranians' attention on a false goose chase initially. And then once they lined up blocked on the highways, the U.S. Air Forces, the Naval Air Forces, came in and shot up a lot of Iranian military vehicles, and the highways leading to the area are filled with wrecked vehicles. Now, we have been needing to deal with this for a long time, and the analogy to the whole situation is similar to that would justify an individual to take self-defense. You're walking down the sidewalk in a sane state where decent citizens are allowed to be armed, and somebody approaches you with hand under coat, or a shirt and says, this is a stick-up, it's going down, let it hit the ground. And you happen to be reasonably armed, and you've been going to the range, and you are proficient, and you have your own necessary store of personal courage, you do your John Wick on him, and you gun him down. You didn't have to wait for him to pull his pistol out and pull the trigger on you before you could engage in self-defense. Neither does a nation. And in military terms and under international law, you are entitled to engage in what they call a preemptive strike. And that means when it looks like another entity is going to attack you or do something very detrimental to your interests, you don't have to wait until they do it. You can stop them from doing it before they can carry it out. So the other thing is it's called a police action, not a war. It's quite common in the recent history. And what goes on is 220-some years in the making, and if you want to see where it comes from, this is the 251st anniversary of the United States Marine Corps, and in their hymn, they have, from the halls of Montezuma, referring to the Mexican-American War that the U.S. engaged in with the Marines in 1848, you have to the shores of Tripoli, which was in 1806, the United States Marines and Navy took on a very similar situation from very close by when the Barbary pirates decided to exercise piracy in that part of the world. So we had a new Navy constructed at the behest of the Congress, who paid for it, and if you want to see a result of it, it's appeared in Baltimore Harbor. It's the USS Constitution, a.k.a. Old Ironsides, and that's what you get. Now, Iran has had the threat that it is thrown out there to the rest of the world that it's going to be a nuclear power, and you don't need to let any religious fanatics acquire nuclear weapons. Now, we have a plethora of nuclear-armed nations, but they have not acted like that. You have the United States, you have Great Britain, France, you have Pakistan, India, China, Russia, you have North Korea, maybe Israel, maybe South America, and they have pretty much done this thing with, okay, we have them, but it would be too horrible to use them, much like the world's military powers in World War II certainly knew how to use and had a huge stockpile of gas weapons, but they did not use them as they did in World War I. So that seems to be what's going on with the nuclear situation. The United States flattened to what they had out there. There's no effective air defense. They backed off because the civilian population does not like the current governance. And if you reflect back 50-some years ago on the Shah of Iran, he was, with whatever his other flaws, was trying to quickly westernize Iran. And there are some people that remember what it was like, contrast to this fanaticism right now. And Iran had to slaughter 36,000 of its own people within the last year as sort of a draconian warning that you have no right to protest or disagree in Iran, and people don't like that, so we are trying to destabilize their government. You heard from Mr. Trump that he, by the way, sent over some arms through the Kurds that they seem to have hijacked, but he can do it again. And that is a threat to the Iranian government. Also, one of the most profound threats he put out there was innocuous. He made the casual remark that very few paid attention to or realized when he said, we had some of our attack submarines. We had an attack submarine chase down one of these Iranian vessels at 60 miles an hour. That's 52 knots. And for the last going on 70 years, most of the world's naval authorities or powers have been wondering just how fast American attack submarines can go. And we've never really published anything official about the upper limit or the top speed. And when he just casually said 60 miles an hour, a.k.a. 52 knots, that basically freaked out the world's naval factions. And China got the message, I'm sure, and they say, we don't have anything that can touch those, and every single attack submarine in the U.S. fleet also has cruise missile capability. That's not nice, so we're talking about wiping out, some of the large carriers we have. We have 11, and they don't even need to send the carriers in. They can launch cruise missile barrages from attack submarines 1,200, 1,500 feet down below a thermocline that we can't penetrate. Also, China, who supplied the anti-aircraft mechanisms to Iran, has discovered that although they are somewhat effective, their whole command structure, their way of having to use them, is rather brittle and does not resist battle damage, setback, or any deviances from what they anticipated occurring. So I imagine that has a great deal to do with Xi Jinping and Mr. Donald Trump having a delay in their meeting from this month set back a while so China can go over there and take a look and verify what did or did not work with their equipment and then sit down at the negotiations table to deal with this thing they were going to do with Taiwan. The plans that aren't too super secret are that they were going to escalate this a little at the time, Coast Guard stop of a friendly vessel here or something coming into Taiwan with this vital piece of equipment or whatever it may be until they finally storm the beaches. But President Trump is saying we aren't going to wait that long anymore, which is all set to an equation that China was trying to work on that developed from when Harry Truman told General MacArthur to back off back in 1950-51 when he was talking about invading China after China sent troops into Korea. So when Trump says, no, we're not going to do it that way, when it looks like it's going to go down, we're not going to wait for you to snatch your gun out of your waistband and pull the trigger. We're going to take you out. I don't think it's going to be nuclear, but I do think there would be some strikes on various facilities in coastal mainland China that might be very draconian. And also, Mr. Elon Musk comes into this picture. There is a slightly delayed thing that is quickly to come in place. His Starship, which is said to be powerful enough to get 200 crew to the moon at one time or to Mars, will be able to take a tremendous payload into low Earth orbit, leave it up there, and it won't be nuclear payloads, it'll be conventional. Anything from the low end to anti-personnel devices all the way up to big deep penetration devices that instead of being dropped from 25, 30,000 feet will be coming in from 120 some miles up, which will really penetrate deeply, much below the 300 or 400 foot depth that some of the stuff we have now can go. And that means that instead of having B-2 bombers fly from continental United States from Montana on a 37-hour round trip to bomb Iran, you can call down hell within 1 hour, because that's how long it'll take a satellite to go in an orbit, and we have quite a few we could put up quickly. So that alters the perspective, and we would be playing the position of, in Norse mythology, say Thor, where we could, or Jupiter, where we could throw down lightning bolts and just take anybody out who got too cute and clowny. And the meanwhile, what's going on over in the Middle East is an interesting little bit of political theater, because Saudi Arabia is collaborating with Israel, is collaborating with Egypt, is collaborating with the United Arab Emirates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but they have domestic situations with too many fanatics, and we see how that is with looking at some of what the far left is doing in our streets and with the borders. And what winds up happening is that we over here have our folk who are saying Israel is controlling the United States. Over there, they're talking about the United States is controlling Israel. Saudi Arabia is coming up with its usual rhetoric, but the Mossad and Saudi counterintelligence train together and do cooperative missions. And the whole idea is to keep these fanatics down. Now, Iran has been using CGI, that's computer-generated imagery, to create a false image that it is striking back at Israel, Saudi Arabia, etc., etc. And those entities and the United States over there are saying, yeah, that's right, they really are. But what they're doing is giving Saudi Arabia an opportunity to evoke this old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and since Iran is attacking us, well, we can collaborate with evil Israel, the way they would say, and go after our enemies, but we don't have to stay there once we accomplish our immediate task of doing in Iran. Now, additionally, Iran has basically destroyed its philosophical basis, its revolutionary basis, when they set up a monarchy. This is the third generation of the same Ayatollah group. Grandfather, father, and son taking control of the country. This last one is not well founded in religion as a religious jurist who is supposed to wisely and justly apply Islamic law to the governance of a sacred country. He doesn't have that background, so that removes it, and it just becomes another penny-ante dictatorship that is a bit too troublesome, and finds that when its bluff finally gets called, it can't rise to the occasion. So there we are. We got a mess that needed to have been cleaned up. Now, taking over and imposing a tariff or a tax or a fee for the use of the Strait of Hormuz may or may not happen, but I seriously doubt that it will, because under international law, that's piracy. And Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution says something about piracy. So you don't even have to have a declaration of war when you take on piracy. It is an affirmative obligation of the United States naval and military forces to oppose piracy, and that's why we have a permanent anti-piracy patrol off of East Africa, where we have Kenya and Somalia located, where there are many, many pirates that try to enrich themselves at the expense of the very heavy shipping traffic that goes around that area. France is over there, England's over there, Japan's over there, China's over there, Russia is over there taking on piracy, and that's been the response of nations to destroy, eradicate, etc., and suppress piracy for the last several thousand years, going all the way back to ancient Phoenicia, including the Greeks, the Romans, the Italian states, Spain, you name it, all the way up till now. So they have themselves a mess. They've been selling wolf tickets, and the United States has been selling wolf tickets too, and now it's time to put up a shut up. So Mr. Trump is saying, okay, military forces have been talking a good game, but they haven't done anything, so now let's do something and see how you like it.
Well,
so there we are.
Well, and Judge, this is kind of interesting, and I think this is what has thrown people off kilter the last couple days, is that on Sunday we saw the very, I guess we could say, profanity-laced tweet from the president about what was going to happen to Iran. We saw the press conference on Monday afternoon. We saw the Truth Social post that came out yesterday that an end of a civilization was going to happen last night unless the Strait of Hormuz was opened up. Even at 6:30 last night, Eastern Time, less than 90 minutes before this was supposed to happen, President Trump's statement said that he needed a complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz, and that's why this did not happen last night, in his own words. And here we are, 9:34 a.m. the next morning, Eastern Time, and we're still not sure if that's exactly what happened, because as I said, Iran has said that passage through the Strait of Hormuz will be allowed if vessels coordinate with its armed forces. That's certainly not complete. And it's not even clear yet whether Tehran will seek a charge or a fee to limit traffic. As you said, they probably won't, but we're not sure at this point. So what deal was made last night that stopped this bombing from happening? Because it seemed like a pretty definite thing, and if you read Iran's declaration to a two-week ceasefire, they don't seem to be agreeing to the things that President Trump said that they agreed to, and if they didn't, where are we going in 2 weeks?
Well, let me ask everybody to do this. Open up your cell phone, go to Google Maps, and when you put in your home address, ask to get the satellite view, and take your fingers and spread it and watch as you can see down into your own backyard. It may be a photograph or a view from 2 years ago, but it's your backyard, and you might even be able to recognize some of your children's toys, like a tricycle or something out in the back. That's what they can do to verify what's going on, but essentially, Iran doesn't have anything left to control other than a small old fishing boat size something, if that big, because their navy's all resting on the bottom of that strait. And what's going on is when you get about 200 kilometers off of the small little island that their alleged control of the strait is based on, you start getting a situation where the seafloor drops down below 1,000, that's 3,000 feet down, where you have plenty of thermoclines that conceal the presence of deep-running attack submarines, so it's ideal submarine country, well within the range of cruise missiles. The other thing is the U.S. Navy, from its two aircraft carriers in the vicinity, the one in the Mediterranean and the one off of the Hormuz Strait, they haven't really brought in an attack strike. So what's in store is you bring in the equivalent of the entire firepower of the Japanese Navy at its most effective, the United States Navy at its most effective, and the RAF all put together, and you have that available to put a massive strike on any of the installations around that strait that may involve bridges, roadways, or means of reinforcement, delivering troops or supplies to the area. Now, Iran doesn't control the entire strait, just one side of it, and part of that one side. So we can effectively obliterate any means to transport or communicate anywhere in an effective range around there. There are six missile launching sites that we have already basically destroyed. And if they try to do something like small craft with heavy charges on board, we can take those out. Now, you've got 2,000 Marines over there, which is essentially a small regiment on board some amphibious assault, on board an amphibious assault vessel. And what they can also do with them is take a great supply of Stinger missiles, of which we have plenty, and you can put 10 to 15 Marines on every vessel that goes down that strait until it gets where it's going, and then they can come back the other way with reverse traffic, and they can man the rails, and they can effectively shoot down anything that the Iranians might try to launch from some portable launchers at those ships, because they don't have any vessels much bigger than a rubber raft or something with an outboard motor on it. Maybe they've got something that's a small recreational size craft. So we can completely dominate that. It's been open to free navigation for several thousand years, so I don't think the national community is going to allow it to suddenly become somewhere where they have to pay a toll to use it. And the issue, by the way, is not whether they can get insurance for their vessels through Lloyd's of London, which will still insure stuff for a sufficiently high price, but the worry is whether or not there will be security and safety for the transshipment of goods down that strait. So the international community is going to wind up including all of the reluctant folk behind the U.S. because those that have a maritime commerce situation are not going to go along with an Iranian government holding them hostage to some little junior grade terrorist activity. And by the way, our main problem is not over there. Our problem is that these idiots in the Biden-Harris administration for 4 years had open borders. And I will call everyone's attention to the fact that when they dropped Little Boy on Hiroshima, it was a 16,000-pound, 12 to 16,000-pound bomb. That's 6 to 8 tons. And when they dropped Fat Man on Nagasaki, that weighed 18,000 pounds. That's 9 tons. And it had a yield perhaps between 18 and maybe 20 kilotons, most likely just 18. But with today's tritium technology, and tritium is available commercially, that's what makes your watches shine. What happens is a 50 kiloton yield nuclear device weighs between 55 and about 80 pounds, and it fits in a backpack or a bedroll pretty easily, and that can be easily carried by one guy, let alone two, and nobody's vetted the people coming across the didn't vet anybody coming across the southern border for 4 whole years, and nobody checked what was being carried across. And what we have to worry about is that these devices, and if not nuclear, then certainly military-grade explosives, which are very devastating, and we've had 80 years of warfare confined to them, and they work pretty well with very up-to-date detonation devices. And what you can say went on in Iran is we took out those who had their fingers over the button or access to those buttons to press to put that in motion. so we don't have a 911 2.0, which is immediately over the horizon the way things were going, or is over the horizon the way things are going, and we're trying to cut that off. So there are all kinds of things going on here, from disruption of Iran's nuclear programs to taking out the leadership that was in a position to activate any sleeper cells that are over here, any devices that have already been planted where they wanted to, so they didn't have to have suicide bombers with dynamite vests or hijacking aircraft, which is an act of piracy, and playing kamikaze and dying when you fly them into some twin towers. There was no more need for that. They could just sit off 2 miles away and watch the fireworks when they flip the switches on their sophisticated detonators. So there's a lot going on there that doesn't meet the eye, and the ignorance of the current press, not you guys, but of the mainstream press, is astonishing, and the discussion is just hooby-booby on emotion rather than on any facts or appreciation of military strategy, tactics, diplomacy, and international law. So, yeah. Okay.
What? No. And well, Judge, a couple things that we've learned this morning, because Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has given a press conference, and President Trump called into ABC News this morning, and Hegseth says that Iran will either give the U.S. its uranium, or the military could target it again. Trump, in his phone interview with ABC News, said the Strait of Hormuz should become a joint venture with Iran, with the United States. And Hegseth also said, I want to get this in, he said Trump chose mercy with Iran's ceasefire. So, you know, I think that's why this is confusing for a lot of people this morning when Hegseth and the president are speaking, because it's very clear at this point, and who knows what will happen, that Iran has not opted to give their uranium over to the United States, that Iran has not chosen to operate the Strait of Hormuz with the United States, that the threat that was there last night did not happen. I mean, you know that the United States has, the world has come up with a term, taco, Trump always chickens out. And we have seen this from the president before, that he will lay a heavy-duty threat down, and he'll take it right up to the point, and then he'll say that whatever was achieved, needed to be achieved, was achieved. But then we find out the next day that maybe that's not exactly the case, that they didn't agree to those things.
Well, that's what they're not going to come out publicly and say, we agree. That would be inviting an immediate revolution to overthrow the Ayatollahs. So what winds up happening is they do what's necessary, and Trump just grins about it because it works. Now, did anybody out there remember Ali when he was in prime, how he approached the fight? What did he say? He made it glamorized as he talked about what he was going to do to his opponent, and ramped it up, and then got in the ring and did it. Well, that's kind of what Trump's doing, and it's called the art of the deal. It's giving somebody some conditions, and they can come back with all they want, but it doesn't mean that they're going to get it since they don't have any authority. It's just our assessment of risk, expense, public opinion inside the United States, the need to either comply with that consideration and its dictates, or to just say we have to do this for the good of the country, whether a lot of people like it or not, because they're just too ignorant of what's going on. Now, behind the scenes, I'm getting word from various sources that it's working, and one of the problems is we've destroyed their communications net so thoroughly that literally they can't broadcast it or use electronic communications like you and I are doing right now. They have to send somebody on a dirt bike on a hot trail of 100-some kilometers in order to deliver a message that's written out. And they have to have a chance to assess what's going on in their country to see what has happened, get a flavor of public opinion over there and how the sources that produced those 36,000 Iranians that got slaughtered over the last year are going to react to this. And also, he's already sent in arms, which he said the Kurds hijacked, but he sent them in, and that's got to be verified. And when it's verified, people are going to go, oh, wow, this would not be good for the United States to take all of these caches of seized Kalashnikov-designed weapons that have been seized by Israel or with the Arab-Israeli wars over the last 75 years, or, let's say, by the United States and Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 20-some years. We wouldn't want those coming into Iran if you are running Iran right now, so you might start to set up compromises with some of the locals and start having some shifting of power without creating a power vacuum like was so foolishly done under the Obama administration with Gaddafi down in Libya, which has produced some real-life headaches that took advantage of the opportunity that we provided them. Now, those are the things that you're looking at, and it's like, okay, what goes on behind the scenes is not what's published in anybody's newspaper on either side. And we have only to look at, let's say, McNamara's late-life admissions about what really was going on with the Cuban Missile Crisis, where he declared that the Kennedy administration and himself were way over their heads, and Khrushchev got exactly what he wanted, which was the removal of American intermediate-range ballistic missiles from Eastern Europe. And there's this famous six-hour-long telegram, but now we're found out from McNamara that what it was a detailed latitude, longitude, location of where every mobile launcher was, along with the serial numbers of the missiles and the launchers themselves, that was communicated to Washington saying, get them out and we will go along and let you look like you backed us down, because we don't have a free press and our people won't know this, and it'll look like you won. But it was a standoff and each side had to compromise. So that's what happens when you have the art of the deal. Somebody says this, somebody says that, and it's like, oh, hey, I did this for 50-some years. I was a lawyer, a trial lawyer, and I was on the bench, either as a state trial judge, or you saw me do arbitration for 15 years. Each side had a position, but just because they put it in writing or expressed it didn't mean they were going to get it. And in the process of resolution, there's a bit of give and take on both sides, and one side just kick butt with their case and what, outright, or the other one was able to prevail, so the moving party didn't get anywhere. But that's kind of where we are right now, and the problem with Iran is it has nothing to strike back with except maybe what's already been brought into this country during the Biden-Harris administration.
Judge, with about 10 minutes left to go in this interview, there are some real-life things here that we know for sure, and I think a lot of people are questioning these. One going on here in America because of this, and the other dealing with Iran because of this. On February 28th, when this all got started, President Trump did say that this would be over within 6 weeks, and one of the main objectives of this was regime change. Now, the Ayatollah, Father Ayatollah, was killed in that strike on February the 28th, but his son did take power. His son is who we're dealing with, and clearly, because of the Strait of Hormuz remaining shut until yesterday, depends on who you talk to this morning, and the lead up to last night, the threat of destroying a civilization, that this new regime is not as friendly as the last regime was with us. So regime change and liberation for the Iranian people clearly has not happened as of yet. And the other thing that's going on here in the United States is, because of the Strait of Hormuz being closed, gas prices since February, since the State of the Union on February the 24th, in which President Trump was touting the gas price drop, have went up more than $1.50 here in the Midwest, approaching over $4 when they were in the $2.50 range back on February 24th. And in some other parts of the country, like California, they're at $10 plus at this point, which is a big problem with people who are up for election this year in Congress and the Senate, Republicans, who want to keep those seats, and I think President Trump, who wants them to keep those seats, so everything he tries will not be blocked. So it becomes a big problem.
Okay, that's easily resolved. Most of the energy prognostications reveal that if we pump another drop of gas and we ramped up our consumption of petroleum products 100 to 150% of the current usage, if we didn't do anything except tap into the oil reserves on the Hawaiian island of Oahu, which is where Pearl Harbor and Honolulu are located, we would have more than a century's worth of oil already on tap, and they haven't added anything there since 1940. Now, the truth of the matter is we don't get any oil that comes through the Strait of Hormuz. Ours comes in on the other side of things, going through the Suez Canal and directly across the Mediterranean going west to the United States. And the truth of the matter is that any oil pump right now, crude oil, won't be into the American system to be refined from anywhere from about minimum of 9 months, more closely akin to 2 years. So the pump prices that have been elevated now are part of a scam that the petroleum industry has been allowed to run on the American public, because when there is a crisis over there, they claim their prices go up, so they have to raise pump prices, but that petroleum that is to be refined is 2 years away. So what they are at the pump with now was acquired at the lower prices from 2 years ago. If you want to understand some of Trump's domestic petroleum policies, understand that right now, up until now, we were importing 99% plus of the oil that we domestically consumed, which is another ripoff of the public. By law, a very high percentage of imported oil has to go into the American oil reserves. In some instances, as much as 25% of all imported oil. The other scam is that on imported oil that goes into the oil reserve, the U.S. government pays the oil companies a premium of $5 over the market price of a 55-gallon drum of crude oil. So it is a very easy opportunity to profit. OPEC is blamed for that, but the fact of the matter is U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, way back in the early 1970s, demanded of the Shah that he call a meeting with certain specific oil-producing countries, ranging from those in Arabia to Nigeria in West Africa. And I had a roommate who was actually present during those proceedings, and he briefed me some years ago on what happened. Henry Kissinger wanted them to form an organization now known as OPEC. Later, after OPEC was formed, he also had the Shah call another meeting at which my former roommate was present. And what they did at this meeting was engineered an oil crisis, which hit us in 1974, that drove oil gas prices at the pump from 35 and 9/10 cents a gallon for 103-octane gas all the way up to a buck and a half, and they started going unleaded. So that was horrible, but the design on that, according to the report I got back by someone who witnessed it, and at the point was Deputy Minister of Energy for the country that he represented. And they had all been instructed after OPEC was formed to acquire all of the interest they could in Japanese and German automotive manufacturing facilities so that they could, when they engineered this oil crisis, have their actual debt load reduced by inflation, and also to an enormous killing by selling or getting the profits from heavily investing in oil or gas-efficient vehicles. So that's been going up and down, and that is a creation of ill-advised American diplomacy from 1971, 2, and 3. Now, we suffer from our own stupidity, sometimes at long term, but this thing about the pump prices going up right now is ridiculous. It's a ripoff because the gas that is at the pump right now is from oil that was acquired at the price 2 years ago. So all the president has to do, and Trump has refrained from that because he wants it to hurt, and I imagine he's going to push for domestic oil production to be ramped up, is to issue an executive order that there's no question he can issue. And the threat of dumping the oil and the reserves into the market will drastically cause the price to drop. Now, the oil companies aren't actually spending any money out of pocket. They get 15 cents on the dollar from the OPEC nations for basically doing the pumping and the exploration of the petroleum products, or the petroleum, and they get not cash out of pocket, but they get it on consignment to essentially do a bookkeeping thing where they sell it to themselves, and it is a house of cards that is being used to rip us off badly.
Judge, I only got 30 seconds left here, and I want to get this in. Easter morning, Tuesday will be Power Plant Day and Bridge Day all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it. Open the effing straight, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah, Donald J. Trump. Was this good or bad, and was this a legitimate threat to do this on Easter
morning? Praise be to Allah is interesting because remember, Saudi Arabia, which is Islamic, is working with us. Egypt is working with us. United Arab Emirates are working with us. All of these Islamic nations are being sent a message that's friendly to them. These are effectively our allies in this coalition. And we're going to check with our satellite the surveillance capacity to see what's going on, and we'll send some ships through to see if they get through, and if not, we have a major aircraft carrier offshore, well out of range of anything they can send out to sea, and on the other side of that land bridge there, in the Mediterranean, it can come in with a joint air strike from two carriers, and you have attack submarines nearby that can launch Tomahawk cruise missiles and other stuff, and that would be the equivalent of a major, major strike from World War II.
Good.
It would be absolutely devastating. We could flatten everything up and down the Iranian side of that strait.
What, was it good to use that language on Easter morning?
Yes.
Okay. Judge?
Because you got to understand, I know the association of Easter with Christianity, but you have to understand what the ancient associations are and who Esdras is. So that's where we get the name Easter. So other people understand that. And by the way, there are Christians in that area who don't have any problems with this. So we keep looking at it in a xenophobic fashion from just our perspective. You have to take the fact that there are other people in the world and you take into consideration what they may be thinking.
Judge Joe Brown, the one and only. Judge, thank you for coming on. It's always a pleasure. Can't wait to have you back on and continue the conversation because who knows what's going to happen in the days ahead of us.
I want to watch the fireworks if it goes down that way.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay, have a good one.
Bye-bye. The legendary Judge Joe Brown, and that's all for us today. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
You are, that you have a kind of a flutter.